I am Shusada Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. This is Shusada Kona Kumara, and you're listening to Satsang with Shusada on BBS Internet Radio. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started. So take a nice deep breath, get yourself centered, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything and all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. And now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. All right. Very good. So it's good to be back. And we're doing things a little bit differently here. PLAN and I are kind of videoing this at the same time as we're recording. So hopefully going forward, we'll be able to run video for these programs as well. So, Killian, we have to think about what we're going to talk about tonight. I had an idea earlier. I had one of my students contacted me to talk about, oh, this might be good, because it's, I think, something that everyone deals with. She contacted me to talk about the issues concerning, on one hand, as a seeker doing very deep inner work, there is, the walk of detachment, and not to be confused with dissociation, but a detachment from the personal self. And as dissolution work occurs more and more, the personal self literally dissolves away. But there's a level of using your own will to detach from the stories, even while the stories are still very much part of the identity, that has to take place. And at the same time that that's going on, she's also in the process of building a business and of kind of going through all of the self-help stuff and all that kind of personal motivation stuff to get her in a place where she can feel more comfortable in her own skin, building her business and doing all that. So it was a beautiful thing that she was witnessing. Wow, like, I'm recognizing that in this journey of here I am as a seeker trying to throw off identification, and at the same time, in certain areas, I feel like I'm taking more on. Yeah. So I think that's something that is kind of universal to everybody in their lives if they do this level of work. So do you want to speak to that at all in just your own journey thus far, that you've seen kind of that dynamic play out?
Yeah, actually, I can. Because I'm in a similar situation where, can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay?
I still can't hear you.
Is that better?
Maybe it's just me.
Really?
Keep talking.
Hello, hello.
Oh, I hear you now. Wonderful.
Okay. All right. I can speak to that. I'm in a similar situation where I really was trying to fall off the grid there for a while, as much as I could. And, you know, I have my spiritual name, PLAN, and all of a sudden I had to become my government name again. And that was very weird. And now I'm, instead of trying to come off the grid, now I'm putting myself out there to like so many people. And it's just so weird. And it's you know, you have to set up like this, you know, and they suggest as you're going forward in this business that you put all these posts out there, like, look at my life and, you know, everything I'm doing is so fabulous. And that's like quite the opposite of what I was doing before. Not that, you know, life wasn't great or whatever, but it wasn't anything that I was putting out there to anybody.
Right.
And, you know, I also have to become someone that people want to follow. And it's like, what is this? Like, it's so weird. Like, I don't know. It's a very, and then even like, you know, you have to put all these posts out there for, you know, for Facebook and social media and just really be in everybody's face, kind of, sort of, you know, be noticed.
Right. And right. And the whole thing.
Very weird. And as I'm doing it, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, as I'm doing it, I'm still trying to walk that line of like, I'm still a seeker. You know, I still am with like the Kumara Center. Like, I'm still a student of Shusara Kona Kumara. You know, like, I'm still trying to, you know, even my interactions with everyone. And
Right. And of course, that is just as much identification as anything else, anyway, right? Seeker. And it is, but it's a necessary identification for a time, certainly. And I think that what you're speaking to is very well put. And it's not any different than anyone else. I think for most, it runs a little bit in reversal because you were a hardcore seeker before you tried to become an entrepreneur or take on a new business or start a new job. So you've kind of done it in reverse. Most people are doing all of that and then they decide to be a seeker. And so for you, your experience, and for my other student as well, experiencing kind of the pangs of, oh my gosh, like now I'm going to go out in the world and take on an identity. And the beautiful thing is you do have the opportunity in that to really observe that whole process that's running, that's trying to get consciousness to identify with something else, you know. And that's what she was actually asking this question very specific to, like it was recommended that I create a vision board, you know, and if the whole thing is to drop any attachment to desire, drop desire, period, right? To see through the whole thing. And here I am creating a vision board. It seems completely counterproductive. And yeah, it does. But one has to remember too that it doesn't stop you from being able to play the game, because it's just a game. And I think that's something that it's very easy to end up identifying, and it doesn't matter what it is, if it's a business or a role you have to play in the world, like parent, you know, or girlfriend or whatever the role is, it's all the same structure, right? So the world itself is trying to get you to identify with these roles and all of the concepts that comprise them. And so the challenge is to walk through the middle of it, not attaching to any of it. And that's one thing that the master in the world, his or her job, so to speak, is to walk among concept, right? Walk within it and walk through concept, but not attach to any of it, because none of it's real, and you know none of it's real. So it doesn't mean you can't be in the world. You have to be in the world here, don't you? I mean, part of, even though the whole thing is illusion, and even though the whole story, all the stories, every single story playing out here, even the story of Shusada Kono Kumara is all illusion, every single bit of it, right? But you have to, from another level, in order to reach the place of awakening where you see beyond illusion, some of that story has to build on itself and continue to play out until you're ready to move in to, full on awakening. So it's a good thing to kind of keep in mind. So what do you do, right? Because the whole point in the work that we do is taking the very deepest of spiritual understandings and turning them into something that you utilize in your daily life here. And the point is that in the utilization of it, to move into spaces of deeper experiential understanding. And what does that mean? It just means you're actually walking it out in the world. And so you're taking these understandings and you're applying them in your daily life and then walking through those experiences. And then on the other side of it, you get the opportunity to come out with greater wisdom because you've actually walked it and now you own it. You know, it's one thing to mentally cognize something and completely something else to move into the space where you have experiential understanding of it. And that is the whole point. So the challenge right now, and it is a challenge, there's just so much running in the collective right now. And the challenge is really to even though there's so much running and there's so much to kind of, on one level, to be done, right? In our individual lives and certainly in the greater collective, one life playing out there, it seems there's so much to be done kind of on every level. And we're seeing that so much with the new president in the United States, all of the energy that has just kind of bubbled up from that happening. And, you know, we see so much opposition and just so much polarization playing out, which is a beautiful thing. It's moving people to really start taking stands for things. And it's forcing us as a collective to really start looking at things that we have collectively decided to just either be in denial about or kind of just repress because it's too hard to look at some of it. So that's a positive thing, certainly. But in the middle of it, for the seeker of wisdom and truth, what do we do with that? Because it seems like everybody's crazy around us, you know. And it's not to move into a space of denial. And that's what a lot of seekers are doing. People, especially if they've been walking a path where they tend to not want to look at the negative polarity, if they are all about, I like to joke, you know, the love and light people, and they're really, really stuck there. Like, oh, I'm not going to go there and I'm not going to look at that, then you do run into an issue because you can't be in denial about what's going on. It's not going to help you in your journey at all. It's exactly the opposite. To stay in denial over what's going on is to literally keep yourself trapped and to dig yourself even deeper. It does not help. So you have this opportunity as the seeker now to really start looking at all of this conceptual stuff that's just bubbling up and over out of our collective psyche, and to really look at it for what it is. Remember, it's not being brought to our attention as another thing to identify with. It's being brought to our attention as something else we need to see through, right? That's the point of the work. One of the very first teachings that I would give out to anybody is that we're not here to change anything, that we're here to see through it. And in the seeing through it, your experience of the collective will change. It doesn't mean the collective will change, because on one level, within the paradigm of duality, nothing needs to change. It's running perfectly. You know, both sides on everything are equally positioned and remain balanced. And the people who get very stuck in love and light, they want the scales to tip this way. And that's not what we're here to do. It's here just to be seen like this. And for us to be able to navigate through it, taking right action, making clear choices, because we can be objective. We can't be objective if we're committed to holding, you know, pushing one side down of the scale so the other side gets propped up. And I was actually speaking to my 12-year-old daughter last night about this. She's going through her hormones are changing and just, you know, middle school's tough and she's experiencing all of that. And I had an opportunity to really talk to her, and she's feeling very low all the time. And so I was explaining to her that for her age, that's not uncommon, and that, you know, there's just a lot going on. But I was saying to her, I'm like, you know, the most important thing, if I could help you see anything, is for you to stop being so tied to feeling good. And I was trying to show her that if you weren't so attached to feeling like you need to feel happy or to feel good, you wouldn't feel so bad, you know? And it's such a simple thing to say. But if you really look at that very simplistic statement, there's so much power in it, because people don't recognize that that's what's going on. They're addicted to chasing happy around. And in the process of chasing happy, they don't allow for the beauty and the gift that lies within the experience of unhappy. And remember that that is where your the gift of spirit truly is. It's not in the happy experience, not that it isn't. I'm not saying it's, you know, happy is devoid of that. What I'm saying is the gift for you and your evolution, by and large, okay, not every single time, but by and large, comes out of your challenging situations, the ones that leave you upset and not quite knowing what to do next and having to really wrestle with what's right, what's wrong, and how do I take the next step, and having to think about other people and how they factor in, and yourself included, and how do I navigate this? Like, those are your growing experiences, and those are the things that are going to launch you experientially into your next level. So if we run around through life just being hell-bent on being happy, we lose the opportunity that's presented to us every day in the quote-unquote negative situations to find those things that actually really do benefit us, where we can start to see beyond all of it. And what I was saying to my daughter was that, you know, I said to her, if you looked at me and I'm not smiling, do you automatically assume that I'm unhappy? And she was like, well, no. And I was like, okay. I said, but think about it. Because when I asked her, what does it mean to you in your world to be happy? To her, she equated it with a big old smile. You know, that's happy. And I was like, but really look at that. You know, why do you have to have a smile on your face for you to feel internally that you're at peace? right? Because remember, our concept of happy is polarized. If there's happy, then there's unhappy. And what's in the middle of all of it? I would say peace, where you don't have to be happy or unhappy because you're not associating with the feeling. Peace isn't a feeling. It's a state of beingness, right? And peace can be there regardless of what emotion happens to be traveling through the astral body at any given moment anyway. You can be at perfect peace and feel the emotion of sadness or feel the emotion of exaltation, right? And that's the point. So for all of our listeners or anybody who happens to see this, you know, that's really what it sounds so simple. It's not simple to walk out, right? It's not until it is. And then it's second nature because it's who you are. But until you can really come to terms just on a rational, logical level to see it for what it is. Wow, I am really attached to being happy. My whole life I've been attached to being happy. Because if I'm not happy, what does it mean? It means I'm a failure. It means I'm not good enough. It means I have no worth, no value. Because people who have value are happy. And people who are valued by others are happy. That's ridiculous. Right? That's ridiculous. Those are all concepts. They're concepts that our whole societal construct is built around, but it's ridiculous. And that's your job. Your job as seeker, someone who wants to wake up, I mean, to truly wake up, means you got to see through this. And it's a huge component that you got to see through this. So Pelion, do you have anything that you want to say to that?
I think that's very interesting that you put it that way, that as long as we're kind of chasing the happy, that's when we experience the unhappiness. I think that's huge because we are very programmed. I mean, I know for me, as much as I know it and I've heard you say it a million times, as soon as I don't feel, as soon as like you don't feel like some sort of peace or happiness, like the first thing that starts coming is like all this stuff, like, you know, I'm a loser, I failed at this, all these negative feelings.
right.
You know, and it's like, stop, you know, it's like, why? It doesn't automatically mean that, like, maybe it's something that I need to look at, but it doesn't automatically mean all these things. And I know that that's my pattern to automatically kick in and start telling me what a failure I am. And how many things I screwed up, and, you know, if I maybe acted stupid, or I don't know, like, it brings up like memories from like way in the past, you know. I'm like, come on, like, really?
Right.
You know, things that I've already even looked at, I'm like, okay, how many times are you gonna try to run this one, you know? Like, it's just, it's funny how it just automatically starts running because I'm not like happy or at peace at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Right. And oddly enough, your sense, you have to remember all positive emotion came out of negative emotion, right? Those states of mind were created because the negative states of mind had dropped so deep that it literally had to create something to get out of it. So positive states of mind came out of that. So if you look at how the programming works from the time you were little, being programmed to be happy, what happened was your caregivers and society in general took something that was natural to your beingness and turned it into something to chase after, something outside of you, right? Happiness, I don't really care for the word so much, but we'll use it. Happiness or joy, let's use the word joy. Like, joy is an inner sense of beingness that is very natural to who you are. And if you look at small children before the little egos start really kicking in, you know, you get a kid under the age of 4, you really see joy in them most of the time. And then anything outside of it comes, and it comes like a flash, and it's right there. It's anger, it's this and that, whatever. And it's gone just as fast as it came. But what is it that they always go back to? They always go back to a state of joy, because that is who they are, right? But then we start shaming our kids to purposefully put them into a space where they feel badly about themselves, because they could, you know, I used my daughter again the other day. I was saying to her, you know, you used to be happy all the time, even if you were doing stuff you weren't supposed to be doing. And she didn't believe me. And I said, okay, good example. Like, you, when you were little, you took one of my most prized books, and you found a red pen and you scribbled all inside this book of mine. And I was like mortified when it happened. But you were happy as could be, because it was exciting for you. And oh my gosh, look at this thing that I can do, and all of that, right? And that's natural to the child. So what we do is, now as someone who quote unquote knows better, I'm your parent, and now I have to scold you or shame you because you did something that the collective has decided is not appropriate, right? If it was a coloring book, that's fine. But if it's mom's, you know, favorite spiritual book, oh my goodness, no, we don't do that. And so what we do is, like, we systematically kind of go in and take away their sense of joy by throwing shame on them. And then we throw the shame on them, and then we start to try to retrain them how to find happy again, right? It's like really contorted, really warped, but that's what we do. So I'm going to shame you into the place where now you have to work to find your sense of joy or work to be happy. So now by the time you've got a kid my daughter's age, 12, you know, and I think for her it was probably later than most. So let's say most kids maybe hit that around 8 or 9 or something. They're already just feeling down on themselves all the time. And so what they need is, they need some kind of external stimulus that they can chase after and that they can attain that allows them to feel happy. And then we get addicted to the external stimulus, so whether it's a video game or sports or, you know, drinking soda or whatever it is, it's like they have to have this thing to make them feel good. Because now if it's just them and only them alone, it's not good anymore. And it's such a shame that we do that to our kids, but that's exactly what we do. And it's out of great innocence. You know, we only do that because that's what we were taught to do. By the time we're adults, we have no connection to our inner sense of joy anymore, other than maybe if you're lucky enough to go away on vacations and you can get out of you know, your regular space for more than just a couple of days, where you could truly let down and relax, you find that again. But now it's tied to the concept that I have to have the vacation. See? So even when you are able to get back to it, you don't think it's attainable all the time. It's still outside of you. It's still out here. And actually, it's not at all. It's just when you're on vacation, you let everything that has been overlaying you on an emotional level, you let it all fall away, right? And then when you get back home, you throw it all on again, you know, like winter coats, and you just throw them on one by one. And now you're back to where you were 2 weeks before, like nothing ever changed. But you think it was the vacation that did it. Wow, the weather's great in Hawaii. That was amazing, right? Not that Hawaii isn't amazing, because it is, but you see what I'm saying. So isn't that kind of our daily struggle, is to find peace or joy just in the stillness, right? In the moment, regardless of what's moving. Because you're here in this world. This world does not need to change. It doesn't. It's perfect for what it's meant to be, right? But you aren't here to be of the world. You're here just to be in the world and to carry your light in the world. And that means you have to allow for everything that the world brings. And people don't like that, right? Why should I allow for that? Because it's part of the world. And as soon as I say, okay, well, I'll allow for all of it except for that piece. I'm a hypocrite. You can't have all of it except one piece. It's all or nothing. It's an all or nothing proposition. You understand? And that's challenging. The challenge is, you know, how can I say that I am in the space of allowance, but I won't allow that? It's all or nothing. And that's a real challenge because the world is messy, very, very messy. There are things going on that are incredibly beautiful, and there are things going on that are incredibly horrible, right? And we're not here to deny any of it. Exactly the opposite, because it's not going to help you to deny anything. The point is to be aware of everything, right? But you know your place within it. So my place isn't to change it. If there's something I can do that would help it, that would help to ease the suffering of others, right? Or to help lend compassion to those who need it, then I will do that because it's my heart to do that. But it's not my job to change it, because nothing here needs to change. You have any question about that?
I actually had a question because you were just speaking to, you know, we're not here to change anything, not to be in denial. Mm-hmm. But with everything that is going on right now, and a lot of us feel that we're light workers, we're here to help, to be of service. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think how to say this. I mean, like, we of course can't get involved in everything that's going on. And then I also noticed that there's things that are going on that you feel moved to be a part of, but that you can also become easily identified with if you become involved too much. Mm-hmm. So how can we be a part of adding our energy to things and being of service to things that we feel moved or called to be a part of, mm-hmm. knowing that we're not here to change anything, mm-hmm. but, you know, and not to get identified with it, and but to make some sort of impact?
Okay, so I don't think that you can. So one thing that where I see conceptually you're looking at it a little bit incorrectly would be that right now you're holding that you can get too involved into something. And that's really not accurate. You could be completely involved in something, and that's perfectly fine. If the identification and the attachment isn't there, then it's fine. You know, jump in head first, be completely immersed in it. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I really thought, like, if you got too involved in something that you're now going to become identified with it.
But you already are. See, what you're holding there already shows the identification. You're holding it as, if I'm too identified, right? Or if I get too into this, I'm going to become identified. So the story is real for you. You see it?
Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh. Sometimes you're just called, right, as spirit moving through you to be highly, highly involved in something, whatever it is, whatever it is. It could be your day job. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything outside of, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be humanitarian work. It could be anything, but that's what you're called to do. You know, great, let's say a great artist is divinely called to be an artist, and they have to jump in 100%. And that's fine. That's fine. It's just for someone who is also identified as seeker and who has made the conscious decision that seeker is going to be, you know, for the duration of identity, is going to be the overriding role that one's going to play out until all roles end. Then for that person, then they have to have just this constant level of awareness that runs, that's looking for, Am I attached now? Because that's the thing. It's very easy to get involved, what we find is that it's incredibly subtle. The workings of it is very subtle. It's so easy to also get attached, right? So anything that you get involved in, if it's a project or a business or whatever it is, that you have to be willing to recognize that, okay, when I get the indication that this is done, I walk away. Regardless of, but I didn't get to this and I meant to do that. And because I'll tell you something right now, if you end your lifetime, if it's time for your transition and you transition out of this body holding on to, but I didn't get to this and I was going to do that, you're going to turn right back around and come right back in. Because if any attachment holds, you're recycling. Any attachment, right? I won't be able to see my kids grow up. I wanted to see my grandkids. Right? All right, well, try it again. All of it has to fall away. Because you aren't anything here. In one sense, you're everything here, right? It's all a projection of consciousness. So you're all of it. But beyond that, you are any of it because this isn't real. There's nothing happening here that's actually happening. None of it. No matter how, quote unquote, real it feels, or how tangible it seems, or how concrete things seem, there is nothing happening here that's actually happening here. It's all projection. It's not real. So from that space, and I speak to the true seekers out there, like that has to be the thing that stays with you over and over and over again, regardless of what's going on in your outer world, looking and saying, but it's not real. Right? And that's the, go ahead, honey.
First, I do want to tell you that Linda said, Linda also said that this was a major challenge for me, that it makes sense what you're saying, and that it actually now feels more attainable. But I also wanted to ask because, okay, so you said this is all like a projection.
Yes.
And before you were saying, because we were talking about taking on, now that we're taking on some new roles and experiencing these roles without attaching or identifying.
Right.
And you were saying that we can take on these roles and it's to experience them, but not identify with them or attach them. And that's kind of what we're here to do, to experience, and whatever comes up with it to, I guess, kind of, the way I'm seeing it is to add it like under our belt of what it is that we're doing as far as evolving here. Mm-hmm. So if we get involved in these other things, right, mm-hmm. Could that be like we're taking on another role? Like,
hey, oh, absolutely.
I'm gonna do this now and I'm going to experience that and evolve there.
Absolutely. Yes. Oh, absolutely. You better believe
okay.
it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. It's no different than Brad Pitt taking on another role to do another movie. Oh, that looks like an interesting role. I've never played a serial killer before, right? And so for the duration of the movie while it's being filmed, maybe he has to be in character most of the time. Maybe he even carries the character with him outside of work because he's got to stay in it. I mean, each actor has their own thing, right? And some of them literally will stay in character the whole time until the project's over. Others can leave work at work. But either way, he doesn't ever believe that he's an actual serial killer, right? He knows that he's playing the role, and that's his job. So it's not any different. It's not any different. The thing is that for the actor, they know the role they're playing isn't real. But for you, in life, you think doing whatever it is that you're doing is real. You see? And that's what makes such a big difference. When you stop seeing it as real and just do it for the isness of it, there's no better way to say it, you're going to get stuck over and over and over again. Does that make sense? Okay. So, yeah, so that is the challenge. The true challenge of our time is to continue to be in the world and to continue to grow and evolve and have your experiences, but always to move into all of your experience from the space of your very deepest level of understanding, right? So there's a way that I would term it that if you're wondering what to do with something when you've seen it, when you've uncovered something that's been holding identification in place, you've uncovered it from an unconscious level and you've brought it to your conscious awareness. What do we do with it then? Well, it's simple. You bring it to the highest light and you surrender it to that light. And that's all there is to do. Now I've seen it. I've seen everything at play. I understand why I've created it. I understand why I've perpetuated it. I understand the role that it was playing in my evolution and in my growth and why it had to continue to play out to get me to see what it was I needed to see. And now I've seen it. And I've seen all of it. So at this point, there's nothing else to do than to literally give it over to God. It's probably the best way to word it that people would understand it. When I say the highest light, it's the same thing. But to just give it over or to give it to the Holy Spirit and say, you know, it's yours. And whatever needs to happen that's in my highest good from here on out, let that be so. If it means that that situation still needs to play out, then maybe it does. Because remember, for things that are going on, it's not always just involving you, it's involving others as well. And we're all in this together as one, right? So again, if we hold ourselves separate, saying this is my experience, and we can't see that we are part and parcel of the greater collective, we're losing sight of the whole point that you are the collective and the collective is you. So to say, well, I learned my lesson, now it's time for you to learn yours and expect that they're two completely different experiences isn't always accurate. Right? You could get very locked into that too. And so remember, it's the ego's job is to hold on to its concept of me. And for the ego, me comes first, always, 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 always. Even when the me is trying to put you first, the story that's going to run underneath it is, I'm putting you first. And if the story is, I'm putting you first, then what really comes first? Me. You see? Can you see that? Just in the verbiage there? Pialyan, do you see that? Do you want to speak to that in your face?
It's a little confusing when you're saying...
Oh, gosh, you cut out on me. Hang on.
It's a little confusing.
Okay.
When you're saying, I'm putting... Did you say I'm putting you first or I'm putting you
first? I'm putting you first.
I'm putting you first, but I'm still putting me first because I'm putting you first.
That's right. Look at it. If the thing is, well, I'm putting you first here, where does that come from? That comes from the stance of me first. Right?
Well, because it all goes back to domination, manipulation, and control.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. And that's still how the mind is so subtle, the way it does this, that now we're a martyr, right? When we say, I'm putting you first, good, huh? Now we're a martyr, and it allows us to feel good about our selfishness. Yeah, and to feel bad about it at the same time, because it makes us feel victimized when we're a martyr, but it's my way of being able to continue to be selfish and to hold that, but to take the focus off of myself at the same time. But it's still centered in me. It's always centered in me. Unless it's coming from the heart. And then it is about you. You see? It will be about you and not about me at all. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. That's a difficult one to navigate.
Right. Right. Well, and you can tend to, and again, you know, because the mind is so subtle, it really takes a trained consciousness to catch this stuff because it is very subtle. But you can witness it when you are, let's say, centered in your heart and you're doing something truly from the space of your heart, you lose sense of yourself, period. Right? So if I'm sitting here in service and I'm holding a satsang where I'm allowing people to ask questions and I'm there to, you know, offer wisdom, within this whole time period, there's no sense of me here. It's just the giving, right? It's just the giving, and that's all it needs to be. But later, if I, let's say we ended this and I walked into my house and I had a child run up to me who needed something, and I said, well, would you just give me 5 minutes? I need 5 minutes just to, you know, let me go to the bathroom, right? Or whatever it is. Now, where has the focus shifted to? Me, right? You see it? That's easy to see, right? So not as easy to see when it's your own world and you're constantly immersed in your own stories and everything else that's running. It makes it harder to maintain a level of conscious awareness of how all of that runs. But when you can really use it as a gauge, when you are in your heart, your sense of yourself pretty much just kind of dissolves out and you're just there. It's almost like, it's like when you're, when the personal self is dominating, you feel as though you're in the body, right? You're in the body having the experience and all the things that you are the doer and all of this. But when the heart is the thing that's truly leading, it doesn't feel the same. I don't know how else to word that. The experience of it is more as if it's being witnessed from outside than being experienced from the inside out. Kellyanne, you understand that, yes? Yeah. So that's a good gauge too. You know, if you're sitting and talking like last night when I was with my daughter having this conversation, giving her really deep spiritual understandings, but in a way that her 12-year-old mind could comprehend, right? So I didn't lose her in the conversation. But in doing that, there was just most of that conversation, I don't even know that I would say I was really even there for it as far as a sense of me. And then there were moments where it felt as if it was just being witnessed from outside, just watching this conversation take place. You know, no thought going on, no nothing. Just this beautiful back and forth between, you know, two people seemingly happening, and it was perfect. It was just perfect. So I think that the beautiful thing is that people get bogged down in, well, I'm a seeker and I don't have these experiences and I haven't had, you know, I'm not awakened, I'm not enlightened, I'm not this and that. But there are times where you will have had these experiences, and I would call them you know, Christed levels of experience. There are times in your life that you have had them, but you certainly don't know you're having them when you're having them because you're not there to experience it. And it's after the fact, when you can look back on it, that you recognize that there was something else moving there outside of, you know, what you would term normal for you. And then you can see it as something else altogether. Kellyanne, you had a question.
Yes, Linda has a question. She said, is it like being forgetful, like you just don't remember when you've finished? And she said, this happens to me a lot, not remembering what just happened.
Oh, sure, sure. When the personal self is the thing that carries memory anyway, right? because outside of, remember, memory is created by mind, and it's built out of pictures in past and future. It's all created out of the mind and out of the sense of the personal self, the identification with that. So if you're moving through the world, recognizing that more and more you've completely, you know, lost something that happened yesterday or whatever, that's perfectly normal. Now, I have to be careful with that because, you know, yes, there are people who get Alzheimer's disease and, you know, yes, these things do happen, right? And obviously there's another component going on there that has to do with chemistry of the brain. However, I will tell you from my personal experience as a seeker, when knowing with a capital K is the thing that is overriding your experience in the world, you don't remember much because you don't need to. Because anything that is needed in the moment is supplied in the moment. And you don't have to think about it. It just comes. And you could have perfect recall of something that you couldn't remember yesterday. And I've had that over and over. I have it all the time with my son because he loves to argue so much. So he likes to bring something up about something that happened, you know, 2 months ago. And it'll be a conversation that if he asked me when we were just chatting, oh, do you remember when such and such happened? I would have no clue. But in the moment, when he gets confrontational and he wants to get in there and I have to, you know, function with him as a guide, really. He doesn't know I'm doing that. But when I do need to do that, it literally comes to me and I'll remember every detail of what happened. I mean, to the word, I can remember everything that was said, and I have to bring it to him. And, you know, usually he has to be shown where he's not seeing clearly. And it's a really amazing experience to have because you recognize that everything you held as far as what I always believed I have to remember this and remember that, and it's so important. And it just isn't, you know, what you need is given to you. Now that doesn't mean there aren't times where I have to set, you know, I use my phone all the time to set things down. My daughter has track practice. I have to remember to pick her up at 6. So I'll stick that in my phone so that I get a reminder, you know, so that if I lose it, then something else reminds me, and that's fine too. But yeah, when you're really outside of the personal self functioning in the world, there's no reason to hold on to anything, because when you're present, there's only now, right? There's only now. And so what was never was, because there's only now. You have to sit with that one for a little bit. That's a very deep thought. What was never was. It never was. Never happened. There's only now. And in this now moment, something can be brought present that the mind will be convinced happened then. But there's only now. Okay. Now, that's not how the world here works. Obviously, the world here works based on the concept of space and time. And you're in that, right? So, yeah, you got to navigate through that too, because when you're outside of space and time, there are certain things in the world that become a challenge, such as remembering to pick your daughter up from track practice. That can be really challenging. Yeah. So we just utilize tools, you know, a cell phone is a beautiful thing, right? Smartphones are wonderful. And you utilize them to help you navigate through something versus you taking on additional identification that says, what's wrong with me? I can't remember. Shame on me. I've got to do better. I should start doing Sudoku or whatever you call that so I can work numbers and stuff and build my brain up. It's not needed. You know, it's not needed. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that that's bad either. But you have to just recognize that there are growing pains to unlearning everything that's been learned here. And for a time, you can feel like you're going a little bit crazy. You know, Pielian, I know you've experienced that. When things really start falling away, you do have experiences where like, wow, like I really feel like I mean, with the first time you feel a wall and it doesn't feel solid anymore, it's a little unnerving, right? It can be a little unnerving. But there's a recognition that happens where you just start to truly understand from a very deep level, like this is natural, this is part of the process, and you just allow it. So go ahead, Pelion.
I was going to ask, for those of us that, you know, this is all kind of falling away, is it possible that, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Is it possible that I'm going to try to explain, like, this feeling that comes, and it's been happening, where you really just feel very wonky. Like, there's times where, like, I could even be walking somewhere, and I'm like, just keep walking, it's okay, you know, if I fall, whatever, you know what I mean,
right. But, yeah.
Or having a conversation with someone, and it's just like, everything is just like, ooh, you know, you're like,
yeah, perfectly normal, okay. Yes, okay. Perfectly normal, so the point in that is to not kind of engage with it from the level of mind that wants to pick it apart and understand it and make sense of it. It's just to allow it, you know, because everything here, yes, that's part of the process, but that's not real either, right? I mean, there's nothing here going on that's real, nothing, absolutely nothing. So even in meditation, you know, people get really attached to what they see in meditation and what they experience in meditation, and they use it as benchmarks, and then they use it as something that proves to them that I'm at a certain stage or whatever it is. And that's all just the mind engaging in something that it doesn't need to engage in. You know, you're just there to witness whatever it is that moves and then not attach anything to anything. Just witness it, right? It doesn't mean anything. Now, that's in highest truth. There are levels of meaning to things, let's say things that happen in the dream state, things that happen in meditation, you know, they are markers of consciousness and where consciousness is moving. And that's accurate, but only as accurate as this world is, which isn't. So you have to even take that with a grain of salt, because that becomes a trap, right? If you're attached to, and a lot of people, seekers, are really attached to, especially meditation, my God, they get so hung up on, you know, I'm a failure if I don't see anything in meditation, or, oh, well, you know, she has all these amazing experiences and nothing happens for me. And so that means I'm not doing it right, or I'm a failure, or I'm unevolved, or, you know, oh my word. And it's like, no, you have to let go of all of it. All the belief that you have and all the expectation that you've built in to your concept of seeker and your concept of what it is, what the awakening process is, like all of it. You can't hold on to any of it. None of it. Every single one of them is a trap. Every single one of them. So at the end of the day, when consciousness, how do I even word this? When all that there is awareness, there's no one there to experience anything. That's the best way I can put that. When all there is awareness, and I'm going to use that word interchangeably with God, then there's no one there to experience that. Awareness is. Awareness is. And there's no witness there. So that is, you know, if the mind wants to grab a, what is the end goal? That's the end goal. That mind does not exist. It just doesn't. Awareness is. Outside of all concept, awareness is. And, you know, people aren't walking around in their divine awareness here on planet Earth, right? Because here, you couldn't. you'd disappear if all that was functioning was pure awareness. It would resonate so fast, it couldn't stay in form here, right? So the whole point here is that you are in form, manifested as form, and you're here to kind of walk it out through this world of form, but conceptually not attaching to anything, right? To walk through it, not to be attached to it, and allow it to fall away when the time comes for it to fall away, because you're not the doer. You're not the one who's going to decide when that's going to be anyway. Just here to just be witness to all of it. There's tremendous peace in that. We get back again, you know, we always seem to come full circle. So instead of the personal self running through life, chasing down happiness and dying at the end of it, saying, I wish I had done this and I wish I had done that. If I'd only done that, I would have been happier. You're just completely trapping yourself. Let it all fall away. And what remains is the peace that you are, regardless of what's moving around you here. Yeah. And from that space, it's done. It's done. There's no coming back. It's unneeded. Yeah. So, all right. So thank you so much for joining us again on BBS. It was a pleasure to be with you again tonight. And we will see you next week for Satsang. Thank you. Good night. You are divine.